We're not just going to be delivering signatures. We're going to be delivering a message that this is a program that the state needs to participate in.
Working to get the Coastal Management Plan reinstated. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, October 10th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the congressional delegation weighs in on the super committee.
We've got very limited opportunity for input into a process that is really very exclusive at this point.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. And by Solstice Advertising, bringing creativity to Alaska businesses and nonprofits. From research and strategy to print, web, and broadcast production. Solstice Advertising, an agency for brands that want to shine.
Local government leaders have taken the first steps toward what they hope will reinstate a coastal management program. The application for an initiative petition signed by some 200 people was delivered to the lieutenant governor late Friday. Before its sunset at the end of June, the coastal management program worked with developers, local residents, and state and federal permitting agencies to assist development along and near the state's coastline. Juneau Mayor Bruce Botello, one of the sponsors, said it was disheartening to see the old program go away after the governor and legislature couldn't come to terms that would extend it.
Our initiative is intended to encourage our state leadership to redouble their efforts, create a credible coastal management program during the 2012 legislative session. And if they are unable to do so, Alaskans will have an opportunity to express their support for Alaska's coastal program November 2012.
The proposed initiative is not the same as the bill that was on the table during this year's special legislative session. It is based on what the local coastal governments see as needed to manage development in their areas. For example, the Department of Environmental Conservation is included in the proposed plan. Under the most recent law and all the proposals the legislature considered, there was what is called a DEC carve-out.
What we've tried to do here is design a program that we think is most suitable for Alaska. And part of that, I think, is looking at making sure that the permitting process is streamlined, that it encompasses all programs done by our resource agencies, and that it be done in a coordinated, collaborative way.
Another sponsor, Mako Haggerty, is a Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly member. He says he was disappointed with the legislative process and thinks the initiative is a better alternative.
We're not just going to be delivering signatures. We're going to be delivering a message that this is a program that the state needs to participate in.
The third sponsor is Kodiak Island Borough Mayor Jerome Selby. Lieutenant Governor Meade Treadwell has 60 days to determine whether the initiative meets the legal framework to go before the public. At that point, the sponsors can begin collecting nearly 26,000 signatures to qualify for the ballot. Botello says the goal is to finish before the legislature begins next year's session. That would give lawmakers the option of passing a substantially similar law or doing nothing again, which would put it on next fall's ballot. A link to a copy of the bill is at our website, alaskapublic.org. A team of NOAA scientists are heading to Bristol Bay to investigate the death of two killer whales on the Nooshigak River. And NOAA's National Marine Fisheries Service is trying to locate the remaining whale. The three killer whales had been far up the Nooshigak for several weeks and were showing signs of freshwater stress. A local resident found the two dead orcas Saturday. KDLG's Daisha Eaton has the story.
Chris Carr of Portage Creek found the dead whale Saturday on his way to Dillingham. Pilots working for NOAA confirmed the report. Carr and his wife are the lone residents of Portage Creek, where there is no phone service. He used a satellite phone to call KDLG and tell us what he saw.
Down by Scandinavian Slough, we came across the first whale, which was beached and bleeding. It was bleeding from several places, its blow spout, its mouth, and also a suspicious hole by the head. It definitely was dead.
The three killer whales had been spotted on a stretch of river near the village of Ekwok for nearly a month. NOAA's National Marine Fisheries Service sent out flights this weekend to pinpoint their exact location with GPS and was considering intervening when they got a report that two of the whales were dead. Carr says he called in a report to state troopers, then continued downriver about 3 more miles, where he came across another boat that was trying to prevent the orca calf from coming back upriver or beaching itself on sandbars near Black Point.
The boat was preventing the calf from going on the sandbars. The tide was coming in, but the calf acted like it was dazed and confused. We had to continue our journey, so we wished them luck. They stayed there. And they were doing a real good job. They were keeping their distance and whatnot, prevent the whale from going up the river.
Carr says he continued downriver to pick up supplies in Dillingham. On the way back, he found the orca calf was still circling near sandbars along the same stretch of river where he'd seen it on the way down. So he decided to try and scare the whale downriver by banging an oar on the side of his boat.
It actually attracted the whale to us, so we ceased that immediately. And I just did a circle in the channel and blocking off the sandbar, and the calf actually started heading downriver, so we just kind of drifted down with it. We were probably about a mile away from the whale at that time. We could watch the whale for about, 2 miles probably is the last time we saw him, and it was swimming better than it was. He was blowing out.
As soon as the orca calf disappeared around the corner, Carr headed back upriver again, where he saw the second dead killer whale near Black Point.
Right away, we could smell it. This one smelled a lot worse than the first one. I tried to cut across, but again, the tide was going out, and I had my big boat, so we started touching bottom. And we could see, but I couldn't 100% identify it as a whale. But the birds were on it, and it smelled like a whale. And I mean, it was pretty obvious.
Carr called in a second report to state troopers. Barbara Mahoney with NOAA's National Marine Fisheries Service Field Office in Anchorage says a team of scientists and veterinarians will arrive in Bristol Bay early this week to begin their investigation.
Headquarters are coordinating with vets to conduct necropsies on both whales so we can determine not only their cause of death, but also identify, you know, their health and what happened, what changed with their stress associated with being in fresh water.
As for the surviving orca calf, Mahoney says the NOAA team will be checking in on it, too.
The whale is now in the marine tidal influence part of the Nooshkak River. We won't, therefore, be needing to push it further down, but with our vets on site, we do hope to be able to find that whale and evaluate it.
The team of NOAA investigators should arrive in Bristol Bay Monday or Tuesday. NOAA is warning people to stay 100 yards away from the remaining whale if they see it, and reminding them that it is illegal under the Marine Mammal Protection Act to harass whales. In Dillingham, I'm Daisha Eaton.
The 12 members of Congress charged with coming up with a way to carve $1.2 trillion from the deficit have been meeting for weeks, but just what they've been up to is a mystery. They're not talking much about what happens in their closed-door sessions. Alaska's congressional members are split in their opinions of the process, one that could have huge repercussions for all Americans. APRN's Libby Casey reports.
The deficit-cutting panel has until Thanksgiving to craft a plan Congress will vote on, and if they fail, major cuts get triggered. Alaska's delegation is outside looking in on the so-called supercommittee. That's not bothering Democratic Senator Mark Begich, who says members will speak loudest when it comes time to vote on the committee's proposals.
I don't feel out of the loop at all, because that would be like asking me the rewrite of No Child Left Behind. I'm not on that committee. I'm not out of the loop. You know, that's how the process works here. You have committees, but you're never out of the loop if you want to be engaged in. Now, some members are just going to wait for the end product and make a decision then. We're looking at everything that we think is important to us and then making comments. That's how we're doing it.
Begich says he's weighed in with ideas through letters and by banding together with other members to give added heft to their perspective. And instead of being frustrated by the tight-lipped supercommittee, he likes that its every action is not being reported in the press and used as political fodder by battling factions. Alaska's senior Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski finds the waiting more difficult. She says it's hard for the 94 elected senators who don't have a say in the discussions and are in the dark. And she senses that same feeling among Americans wondering what the committee is doing.
It is a mystery, and I think this is somewhat frustrating to those who are observing from the outside. But for those who are observing from the outside, just imagine how frustrating it is for those of us who are elected to represent our constituents. And we've got very limited opportunity for input into a process that is really very exclusive at this point.
Murkowski says it would be fairer for all members of Congress to have a say, but she's still supporting the supercommittee's efforts because she warns that if they don't come up with a viable plan to save over $1 trillion, the triggered cuts could be very painful and left up to the White House rather than Congress. Top members on House and Senate committees have been able to give the deficit reduction group their priorities. So as the ranking Republican on energy, Murkowski's registered her input. While she's pressuring the committee to bring a good plan before Congress, Representative Don Young has all but given up. The Republican House member says no one is willing to tackle changing the entitlement programs like Medicare that are big spenders.
What makes you think that the 12 people are any smarter than the rest of the Congress? I really don't believe that. Some of them are my good friends, and I have let them know in issues like primary care, I want to make sure it's still funded. I think that's crucially important for the health of our country.
Young says he's picked some top issues to advocate for, but just how the supercommittee weighs members' input like his won't likely be revealed for weeks. And one thing the Alaska delegation totally agrees on is the seriousness of the task ahead and the difficult consequences if the supercommittee can't come up with something that Congress can stomach. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Alaskans turn out for an Occupy Anchorage rally.
Both parties are guilty because both parties are influenced by the really wealthy. And the voice of the dispossessed isn't here.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. And by
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for over 50 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. Crowley.com.
A 21-year-old Nome man was arrested Friday following the death of a young woman of the same age. KNOM's Ben Matheson has the story from Nome.
Sean Aquilic was arraigned Saturday on one count of first-degree murder following the death of 21-year-old Marie Gabriella Pushrook. Bail was set at $50,000, and Aquilic was remanded to the Anvil Mountain Correctional Center. Aquilic and Pushrook were in a relationship, according to charging documents filed by the district attorney. The DA's report says a roommate of Aquilic and Pushrook arrived Friday morning at the residence on East 3rd Avenue to find the house barricaded from the inside. After being let in by Aquilic, he reported seeing Aquilic covered with blood, as well as blood on the walls of the kitchen and living room. Police responded to a call from the roommate. An officer found Pushrook's body covered in blood on the bedroom floor and observed lacerations on her forearms with a bloody knife nearby. The court document says Pushrook appeared to be strangled, as police found finger marks on her neck and bruising on her bottom lip. Following his arrest Friday, Aquilic was taken to the Norton Sound Regional Hospital for treatment of scratches and bite marks. Police later seized a video camera with footage taken before and after Pushrook's death. The video shows her drinking a beer and texting before 3 a.m. Footage taken by Aquilic later that morning showed himself with a bloody face playing guitar with Pushrook's body lying nearby. When asked by law enforcement what he had done to Pushrook, Aquilic stated that he did not remember. Aquilic will next be in court October 17th for a preliminary hearing. Reporting in Nome, I'm Ben Matheson.
The body of a missing boater from western Alaska was found after a three-week search effort. From member station KYUK in Bethel, Shane Iverson has more.
The search for Walter Springer of Bethel is over. Search and rescue volunteers from Nepakiak located the body of the missing 25-year-old this weekend. Bethel Search and Rescue President Peter Atchak.
That's a sad ending, but at least now the family can put a closure to this one.
Springer had been missing since a boat he was in capsized in the Kuskokwim River over 3 weeks ago. The Alaska State Troopers supported the search for the first week. Since then, it's been an all-volunteer effort. The official search was already called off, but local search teams offered their gas and drag bars to those that wanted to keep looking on their own.
It's the people out here. They're just full of love and they want to help out. You know, they were really hard at it for the last several weeks and just kept at it day after day.
According to Atchak, it took not just dedicated searchers. It also took a very low tide to reveal Springer. Two men from Nepakiak Search and Rescue found his body below that village on a sandbar.
That only you can take during peak high tide. And it's got a very shallow, very small channel that goes through there. You know, when the tide was low, our two boys from Nepakiak were idling down through there and then pushing their boat until they got to that area where that body was.
The men reported first seeing what appeared to be a body at about 1 on Sunday afternoon. They spent another hour pushing their way through the shallow water before they were able to confirm and call in their findings to authorities. Their discovery does end any hope that Springer made it out of the river alive. Search teams spent the better part of a week exploring footprints and other leads in the land near the area where the boat is believed to have flipped over. Alaska State Troopers have already charged another man involved in the incident. Michael Treat, age 27, of Bethel, was in the boat with Springer. Treat was found on the riverbank with 17 jugs of R&R whiskey. He was charged with probation violation and importing alcohol into a dry village. Reporting from Bethel, I'm Shane Iverson.
More than 200 Alaskans spent a good part of their Saturday afternoon and early evening in downtown Anchorage's Town Square showing solidarity for the Occupy Wall Street gatherings that are ongoing around the country. The Occupy Anchorage demonstration started when Anchorage resident Brian McMillan came back to town after working as a carpenter all summer at Kennecott and caught up on the news of the national protests. McMillan says money has too much influence in politics.
And we don't have any. So I guess this is us trying to find our voice, trying to have our grievances addressed, trying to show solidarity for the folks that have lost their homes and been foreclosed upon. And, you know, the 1 in 10 who are out of work currently in this country, and even the ones that have gone back to work, who are now working part-time or making service industry wage, not manufacturing wages. So it's all these things.
And many others based on the signs and the frustration in the voices of those attending. Some were speaking out against corporate influence and war spending. Jed Whitaker took the microphone and said the government does not represent the average person.
Are we going to continue to be slaves to the corporations and bail out the banks and the corruption that goes on in this country? I heard a no, but I want to hear more no's.
No!
We need to stand up and elect people to Congress who are going to say, if we do not declare war, we will not fund war.
Others were concerned about the lack of adequate health care for many Americans. Tom Macchia works in the health care field and said in the past he was in favor of a single-payer health system.
Now, thinking of it and looking through it, looking at it, I'm in favor of socialized medicine. I had an opportunity, I worked for a long while in the Native system here. Perfect example of a wonderfully working and functional and getting better all the time socialized medical system. And people aren't paying attention. They're not seeing that we've got a great example in the state of how socialized medicine can work.
Peter, who only gave his first name, was attending the rally with his nephew. He said he is a psychiatric nurse practitioner who works with the mentally ill. He says he votes in every election and believes deeply in democracy, but he says the system is broken and just voting isn't enough.
And it's a deep sadness for me and an anger because something has to be done. Obviously, voting isn't enough. And so somebody has to say enough. Both parties are guilty because both parties are influenced by the really wealthy. And the voice of the dispossessed isn't here.
Peter's 25-year-old nephew, Cameron Cole, said he wanted to dispel what he says is misinformation about the Occupy gatherings. He says those attending aren't Marxists or communists.
I think capitalism has a lot of benefits, but we need to have regulation built in. Runaway capitalism obviously is not the best when, you know, the 99% of us are at the bottom of the income scale, 1% control a good portion of the entire GDP. You know, that's not acceptable.
The gathering started before 3 and was breaking up about 7:30 in the evening as a man walked through those packing up food, instruments, sign-up sheets, and banners. He brought a warning that Mayor Dan Sullivan had announced anyone camping in the square overnight would be arrested. Residents of one of Alaska's most eroded villages are making steady progress relocating to higher ground 9 miles away. The Yupik Eskimo village of Newtok is leading the seemingly impossible task of moving to a safer site called Murtarvik, which means getting water from the stream in Yupik. The community of 350 is located near Alaska's storm-battered western coast and is among the most vulnerable among scores of villages in the state affected by erosion and flooding blamed in part to rising global temperatures. Newtok is the only community to begin the actual physical labor at a new site, a process that began in 2009. The work has steadily continued with yearly short-term funding from a variety of sources, including the federal and state governments.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, and by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds on the web at arcticwirerope.com. The Federal Aviation Administration sets standards for the operation of aircraft in airports and provides services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska, so when passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. There's more information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska or toll-free at 1-866-357-4704. This message sponsored by the FAA.
Two people have been killed and two wounded in a shooting outside a bar in Anchorage. Police responding to 911 calls early Monday found the victims just before midnight. The body of one man was found in the parking lot of JJ's Lounge. The body of another man was in the street. Police Lieutenant Dave Parker says officers found another man and a woman wounded. They've been taken to a hospital with gunshot wounds. Parker says police have been searching the Muldoon neighborhood for several people who fled on foot or in vehicles after the shooting. He says no arrests have been made, but police have been interviewing several witnesses. A neighbor says he heard about 8 shots. A witness to the shooting says the gunman fired on one of the victims several times, including a couple of shots at point-blank range. The witness asked not to be identified by the Associated Press for fear of retribution. She saw the shooting from outside the bar. She says the male shooter fired a handgun several times while advancing on one victim, who already was on the ground in an apparently defensive posture. She says it appeared the shooter was making sure the victim would never get up again. Northern Prince of Wales Island, Petersburg, and Wrangell could be connected by a new year-round ferry service as soon as this spring. The federal government has offered a loan of nearly $3 million to the fledgling North End Ferry Authority. Project planners say there's more work to do, but that loan covers the major financing needed for startup. KFSK's Matt Lichtenstein reports.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture announced it had approved the loan this month. Jim Nordland is the USDA's State Director of Rural Development in Alaska.
We're pleased to be able to extend the nearly $3 million loan to the North End Ferry Authority. We think that's going to assist with an integral transportation link for the ferries in southeast Alaska.
Marketed as the Rainforest Islands Ferry, the link would connect Kaufman Cove on northern Prince of Wales Island with Wrangell and South Mitkoff Island, about 25 miles out the road from Petersburg. The Inter-Island Ferry Authority tried providing that service for 3 years, but canceled it in 2009 because there wasn't enough ridership to cover costs. The state's newly built ferry terminals at Kaufman Cove and South Mitkoff have gone largely unused since then. The North End Ferry Authority is looking at buying and refitting a used crew supply boat from the Gulf of Mexico to serve as its vessel. Manager Kent Miller says the $3 million loan will be enough to cover that budget.
It provides for the acquisition of the boat, its overhaul and refit, its delivery to Southeast Alaska from the Gulf, 5,800 miles, which has quite a fuel bill attached to it nowadays. It will also provide for purchase of two Mercedes Sprinter mini coaches, as we call them, an 11 to 14 passenger mini coach that will pull a closed trailer for baggage and parcel express.
Miller says the proposed vessel is 155 feet long and can carry 60 passengers inside and 12 SUV-sized vehicles on its open car deck. The mini coaches will transport walk-on passengers into Petersburg from South Mitkoff and onto the POW road system from Kaufman Cove. Miller says the authority developed its business plan to enlarge the potential market for service to and from POW.
And also to reduce the costs of providing the service. This class of boats, of which there are hundreds actually, operate with a crew of three, and they have, although they have substantial fuel consumption, it's about 50% what the fuel consumption per mile is for the Prince of Wales class vessel.
That vessel class includes the 198-foot MV Prince of Wales and MV Stikeen, which are owned by the Inter-Island Ferry Authority. The IFA formed in 1997 and is made up of representatives from Petersburg, Wrangell, Craig, Kluok, Thorn Bay, Kaufman Cove, and Heidelberg. It continues to provide daily ferry service between Ketchikan and the eastern POW town of Hollis. Rather than competing with the IFA, Miller says the North End Ferry is intended to increase the market for that existing service as well as itself.
We're hoping to have a really good working relationship with both IFA and Marine Highway, and we hope that this service is going to be a benefit to everyone involved.
Like the IFA, the new North End Ferry Authority is community-based and independent from the state. It's also independent from the IFA. Right now, the only community that's involved in the new authority is Kaufman Cove. The $3 million loan gets the North End Ferry Authority past its biggest hurdle, according to Miller, but he says there are still some smaller hurdles to clear. If all goes well, he says the authority hopes to start its service this coming May. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Daisha Eaton in Dillingham, Ben Matheson in Nome, Shane Iverson in Bethel, and Matt Lichtenstein in Petersburg. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com. Solstice Advertising, bringing creativity to Alaska businesses and nonprofits, from research and strategy to print, web, and broadcast production. Solstice Advertising, an agency for brands that want to shine.
And by
Condor Airlines, offering nonstop service to Frankfurt from Anchorage and Fairbanks between May and September, with connections to most German and European destinations. Details available at condor.com.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.